You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina.
Well, hello and welcome to the cycling podcast Feminan. The dust has well and truly settled, hasn't it, on the road racing season. I can hardly remember what happened, but thankfully I'm being joined for this episode where we are going to be going through some winners and losers of the season by a winner and a loser. I'll let you guys decide which one is which. And that is Rebecca Charlton.
Hello. Your intros just get better and better, Rose. Thank you.
That one I hadn't even thought of.
Came to you as you looked at my face and losers.
No, I said you've got to decide between yourselves and Denny Gray.
Well, thank you, Rose. I guess I am the loser, aren't I? Because I didn't win the Christmas quiz last year. So I am the current loser. In fact, I've never won it, unfortunately. So, yeah, Becca's definitely the reigning champion, the winner.
I'm so glad that 11 months on, we still haven't got over it. I like that kind of spirit because it's good, because we will have a Christmas quiz, of course, next month.
It hasn't been cancelled because of the fallout last time. That's good to know.
I think I'm really nervous about that because if I lose for a third time in a row, I might just have to hide myself away. Yeah.
And never get sacked. You get sacked.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes my decision easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you've just got to go. Oh, I see. You're just going to throw it now, are you? Free up a bit of time each month.
Yeah.
I know that you're seriously prepping for this quiz now, so I need to buck up, really.
Yeah. I need to do the most bucking up because I've actually got to write the thing. But this episode will be a great reminder of all the things that have happened this season to give me a bit of inspo for doing that. We are also looking to the future of cycling, in fact, in this episode with our mini feature, which is talking about the Team Amani, which is the first ever African-based continental women's team, which is going to be racing next season. I'm sure some people will have seen the launch that happened at Rulo Live, but we're going to be talking to the partnerships director, Zylon Van Eyck, and Ashley Moorman-Passio, who is continuing as a rider at Age Insurance, but will be also taking on a mentorship role for the team. And we'll be talking to Zavari Nereri, who is a Rwandan cyclist and is the team leader next year. So that's all to come. But, well, my winner, my loser, shall we talk about the winners and losers this year? It's been a really intriguing season, hasn't it? Because we spoke for many, many months, in fact, at the end of last season about the transfers and having all the big talents spread across all the other teams and what that would mean for the racing. And we did touch upon last month, didn't we, a bit about how we feel like that has played out, the positives and negatives of that. But I guess, Denny, how successful was that transfer merry-go-round as a fan, would you say?
Well, it was very successful because it got us talking, didn't it, for so long. We were so intrigued to see how the season would play out. And even when the season began, we were still unsure of the dynamics for quite some time. And I think the teams were themselves, and that influenced how the racing played out. So it was fascinating. And I think it ultimately determined the race outcomes. I think we mentioned before in Paris-Roubaix, for example, I think with Pauline Ferrand-Prévot getting away and her return to the peloton, no one quite knew where she was out. And when she went, I think, you know, the hesitation was in part because of that new dynamic, which we saw in the teams. No one knew who should be chasing. But also, I think she was a little bit of an unknown at that stage, even though she had such a track record. She's the Olympic mountain bike champion. We know what she did on the road previously. I don't think anyone pinpointed her as a Paris-Roubaix favourite. So I think it was enormously successful. I loved the fact that we had a completely different cast of teams competing for the Grand Tours. Esti Works had an enormously successful season, but they were by no means the success or the runaway success that they were before. So I think it just added so much intrigue to the women's peloton and the racing this season.
Well, mentioning Pauline Ferrand-Prévot is a great little segue into me asking Rebecca who her winners, teams or riders would be from this season, because she really did have a remarkable season. And I think it was a little bit what you say, Denny, as she went a little bit under the radar early on. But it's also like when you've got so many talents on so many different teams, you're not looking at just two teams to try and kind of nullify their threat. You're looking at everyone, and you can't defend against absolutely everyone. Or if you do that, you get like what we had at Omloop, where Law Class won. Because everyone's defending against everyone, and that means that actually only people who are considered totally not a threat can escape. But yeah, Becca, give us. We know that you are a sunny perspective person. I wouldn't dare put you in it and ask you to tell us your losers. So you can tell us some of the winners from the season. Who are you considering?
You know, I love a convenient segue, so thank you for that, Denny and Rose. But yes, you know, I'm too far on the fence, or sunny side, as you put it. I love that, to come up with anyone being a loser this year. So let's start with the winners from me, and then I'll give the difficult job back to Denny. What a pleasure to watch this season. I mean, we quite often get overexcited about things, don't we? We anticipate something, or we create drama where perhaps it isn't there. But that wasn't the case this year. We speculated that this could be the biggest, best season with the spread of talent and everything that brings that we've ever seen. And it delivered. It totally delivered. And Pauline from Prevost was a really interesting entity, I think, because like you've both said, her pedigree, her history, her experience in the sport, we know how good she is, but she still was an unknown because of the way she came back in. But I feel that one of the biggest talking points with her as well has been the fact that when you say openly in the press, I'm setting out to achieve something as big as targeting the Tour de France femme Avec Zwift and everything else above that she did this season as well, as you just mentioned, it's not easy to deliver on that and back it up with that pressure on your shoulders. So she's obviously a rider that likes to put that on herself to say, right, this is the intention, rather than doing it more quietly like other riders we've seen do in previous seasons. But I love the fact that she said, this is my ambition, this is what I want to achieve. And she just went out and delivered it. And we all got to enjoy watching that. Recently, I saw a quote that was shared a lot on social media and across the press from her appearance at Roulaire Live saying, I don't really like racing, but I like winning. And I think that's why I'm sat here talking about cycling rather than doing it, because I just didn't do the winning bit. but it's really interesting to understand her process. And I think that another thing to look at is the freedom that she was given to an extent on the team of Visma Lisa bike, to know and be trusted that she had that experience to say, this is how I'm going to ride the season. This is how I'm going to prioritize my big, big target. And I'm going to disappear and do what I need to do in the meantime. I know she was also dealing with an injury at points as well. So we sort of saw her absent at points, didn't we? And then came back with a bang for the tour. So I just think everything we could have dreamed of happening this year with that transfer of her coming back onto the road, totally delivered. So for me, obviously, that would be the first big win of the season in terms of that transfer to Visma Lisa bike. Marlen Reusser is the next one I'd say on my list. Big win for her. And Movistar, again, at the pinnacle of the season, she unfortunately was out with illness, but everything that led up to that did not disappoint. I think she was truly, truly exciting. Again, in the freedom she was given, the trust she was given with Movistar, and we knew the caliber of rider she was. But to see her in a different role, performing as a GC leader, for me was so, so exciting. And some of my, you know, most memorable moments, I guess, of the season came from Marlen Reusser, for sure.
Good, because we were obviously mentioned her as a big transfer, but we, at the beginning of the season, were more seeing her as she'll be great at bolstering Movistar's effort. You know, she'll get the odd kind of win from a breakaway. Obviously, she'll kind of take away, she'll win all of the time trials available. Not that there's that many specifically time trials. But we didn't see her as this great GC contender at all. That is a little bit a symptom of having all the talents spread around. It's almost like it's allowed other talents to emerge from that, because it's almost like all the teams are going in with a mentality that they can win the race in some way. And then to a lesser extent, I guess it's like, you know, at UAE, the UAE team, when we were at the Tour de France Femme, they were kind of ostensibly going for Elisa Longo Borghini, but, you know, she was ill and very fatigued and didn't start. Was it the second stage she didn't start, or third stage? But she dropped out very early on, and then they had to really pivot. And then we saw Maeva Swiban take two stages, and then we saw Vlodacek also finish really, really highly on GC. So it was almost like the team had set out to win that race and compete at that top level. So even when they lost their team leader, they were still going in wanting to take something out of it. Whereas I think a lot of the time in previous years, there's been, I don't want to say a complacency with teams, but certainly teams who don't have the number one top rider are kind of all going into the race competing for, well, be good to get a top 10, good to get a top five. I think we've kind of seen a bit of a change in mentality, which I think is possibly where it's like kind of like a almost an oxymoron that we have all this big talent across all the teams, and yet we've seen a lot of breakthroughs this year as well. Shall we throw a loser in there now? Denny, shall we have someone who maybe did, someone or a team that perhaps...
Yeah, I know all about losers, don't I, Rose? Being on myself. Come to me. Yeah, it's a very loaded word, isn't it, losers? And I think every team kind of had successes in the year. But I think a couple of teams that perhaps... might have been disappointed with the year. Let's put it that way. One, I think, would be Canyon-SRAM. Hugely talented team. Of course, they had the reigning Tour de France femme champion, Kasia Doma, going into this season. Chloe Dygert, of course, is an amazing time trialist, Olympic superstar. And also a whole range of kind of young, kind of talented riders, like Zoe Backstead and Ricarda Bauernfeind, Neve Bradbury, a kind of a cast of potential winners in big races. And yet they didn't have the big successes, at least, that they had in 2024, where, of course, they won the Tour de France Femmes, but also La Flèche Wallonne. I think their biggest win was probably the Tour of Poland on GC, which was Chiara Consonni. Zoe Backstead had a strong year, but... overall, that team didn't pull off any big classics wins, any big GC wins. So I think that is a team that, you know, has the potential to win big, but didn't this year. So I would say that they might be disappointed with their year.
Do we think that that might have been a little bit almost because of the success of the year before?
Yeah, I mean, there's a high bar, wasn't it?
But also, it was kind of that you can't be... win the Tour de France Femmes in 2024 in such phenomenal style, in the style that Kasia Niewiadoma did, and then not come to the race the following year as defending champion and kind of give it your total focus, you know, it'd be the kind of, I feel like it kind of subsumed the whole year for them. You know, they were... it was important to do a really, really good, put on a really, really good show at that race. And it kind of didn't leave so much space for looking for other targets, perhaps.
Potentially. But I also feel with that team, I mean, what they did well in 2024 was not just what Kasia Niewiadoma's big wins, which, of course, you know, exceeded expectations. I think even she would probably admit that. But they also did well by... getting kind of victories like stage wins that they did through, say, Neve Bradbury at the Giro that year. I don't think, or in 2023, I recall Ricarda Bauernfeind and Antonia Niedermayer both getting kind of stage wins in the Giro and the Tour, respectively. So, I don't think they had a bad year. And I think you're right. I mean, Kasia Niewiadoma was very much targeting the Tour, and it was probably the most competitive Tour field we've seen so far in the modern version of the Tour de France Femmes. So to finish, you know, on the podium was still a huge success for her and for the team. When we're talking about a women's peloton where it has been, the racing has been more open, it has been more predictable, we have had winners coming from multiple different teams. I wouldn't class them as a loser, but I would just say that perhaps they might have been disappointed not to have come away with a big win in 2025.
I can see you, I've got my binoculars on, Denny. I can see you ascending the fence that Rebecca Charlton likes to sit
on. I'm up here on.
there's no room for you up there, Denny. You have to pick a side. Come back down. Rebecca's set up her big armchair up there.
You know what it is, Rose? I'm just going back to our trip to the Tour de France Fam this year and remembering what a lovely coffee the team gave us at the team bus.
Exactly.
I don't want to jeopardize our chances.
Everyone gives me a coffee.
Espresso in the morning from Canyon SRAM.
No, a future. Yeah, okay. He's got future coffee in mind. That's right. Well, let me throw out someone who. I mean, this is a good talking point, I guess. I would have classed Team SD Works, and I know you kind of briefly mentioned them at the very top there, Denny, as losers this year. But then again, probably on Rebecca's list of winners, I imagine Lorena Vibus is certainly on that list because of her absolutely phenomenal, totally dominant season. But it's really odd to be at the Tour de France Fam and not see, well, not just the Tour de France Fam, but also, you know, the other major races, and not see a Team SD Works led GC charge. That's really unusual because normally it's like we are every single day having to go to that bus and beg and plead for interviews and, you know, try and kind of surprise them while they sit in their ice bath and things like that. But we didn't have to do that this year because obviously much had been said about Anna van der Breggen making her return as a rider for the team. And obviously also a lot had been said about Lotta Kopecky emerging as a new GC champion. And you know, it is fair to say there was a lot of bad luck that they had, really, particularly with Lotta Kopecky through injury and illness, not being able to perform where she wanted to perform. And Anna van der Breggen, obviously, you can't really, even a champion like her, you can't really expect her to come in full guns blazing. I would say, I know they would never, ever, this would never be their party line that they were a bit disappointed by this season, but I would have to say that they were a disappointment for me. Becca, I mean, I wouldn't dare to come to you now to get your view.
I was just going to say a positive spin on that. I was going to add that it is testament to the class that they have bought, and it's been our talking point, hasn't it? Every season in recent history of the sport has been their dominance. It has been their dominance. And so, yes, they did not have it all go their way this season, to say the very least. Just checking pro cycling stats, Lorena Vives is up to 118 wins, and she was just racking them up one after the other this year. And I just think she's obviously been tremendously successful, but for the team as a whole, and again, that just goes to show where we expect them to be with the number of wins she's bought as a sprinter for them, that we could say that they're still going to be disappointed. But yeah, I think Lotta Kopecky, everything has gone her way in recent years, but this season it really hasn't. And I've really, really felt for her throughout this year because, yeah, she has had so much go against her. And I think it just further shows her resilience. And we know that she'll be back and she'll be strong again. But it just hasn't been her story, has it, throughout this year?
I mean, I should say, you know, SD Works have got by far the most wins of any of the World Tour teams. They've taken 47 wins this season. The next most is UAE team, who we would say are kind of undoubted sort of winners of the year, wouldn't we? I think we wouldn't question how successful they've been, but they only got 28 wins, so it's a huge amount less. I did get the Casio Nivea Doma out earlier to work out that of all of the wins, and we're talking about all UCI races, that SD Works have taken 22% of those wins, which is, yeah, phenomenal.
It's amazing. Really. And I think Anna van der Breggen as well, I think she was another big question mark, because we know that if anyone is going to just completely exceed expectations coming back in their first year from being a DS, you know, it's going to be her. But I think you could just see the podium positions that she did get. She was just delighted. And I think she didn't know, did she, how she was going to fare. So I think in her mind, in that context, I think she'll be pretty happy with how it went as well. She's a natural born winner, isn't she? But she put in some really, really stellar performances. Something I actually was going to just add to my point earlier about Marlin Moisa is I was talking very much about the moments before she was ill at the tour part of the season, but of course she then went on to win the world championship. So I should just drop that in there as well, because I omitted that earlier.
I think we never actually managed to say the quote, Denny, did we, that the Dutch journalist Renze Lolkema said to us while we were out at the Tour de France, fam, that in an interview, Anna van der Breggen had said that she doesn't really like doing the big races because she prefers to play piano alone with no one listening. You take from that that she prefers to race when no one's turning up to watch, which is a problem. Maybe Anna van der Breggen prefers playing the piano to racing. I don't know. I mean, but it's just one of those great quotes that's stuck in my mind. We've never had a time to mention it, but yeah, we there's more to come from her, isn't there? For sure, we definitely can't write her off. Denny, where do you see SD Works on the winner loser thing? And actually, I'm going to put in there also, because we haven't mentioned FDJ Suez, have we? And Demi Vollering, which was really the biggest of all transfers. We haven't even mentioned them yet. Did you put them down? Presumably, they made it onto Rebecca's list of winners. But, you know, it wasn't the wholehearted success, was it, Denny, for Demi Vollering?
It wasn't, by any means. There was a lot of pressure on that team coming into this year because they had Demi Vollering, who was the out-and-out favourite to win the Tour de France Femme this year, prior to knowing kind of how incredible Pauline Frohman-Prevot was. And we saw, I think we, you know, the team's reaction to Demi Vollering's crash, I think it was on stage three, wasn't it, of the Tour de France Femme this year. They were hugely protective, and you could just see almost feel the tension within the team at that point, because they knew that this was the big prize they'd been after. They'd invested huge amounts of money in Demi Vollering and kind of the rest of the team to target that race, and yet events kind of worked against them, and they didn't come away with the big win there. Of course, Demi Vollering did win the Vuelta, but
doesn't she always win the Vuelta?
She always does well in Spain, doesn't she? Team didn't have an unsuccessful year, and I think what they did really well was that they won across, you know, they had multiple winners in the team, so they weren't just reliant on Demi Vollering, where other teams are perhaps reliant on a rider. You know, they had Elise Chabet and Ali Wollaston kind of doing really well at the Tour of Britain, and other riders getting wins. It was interesting also because we had heralded not just Demi Vollering but Evita Muzik and Juliette Labousse as potential Tour de France winners one day, and Juliette Labousse was a brilliant domestique deluxe for Demi Vollering, but perhaps didn't get to ride for herself as much this year, and Evita Muzik perhaps didn't hit the high notes that she did in 2024. So yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. I don't want to go too close to that fence again, Rose, but I think it's a mixed bag for that team. It wasn't, despite the number of wins, I think given the resources they had and the expectations, I don't think they quite reached the heights that they were hoping to achieve.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because of these big transfers, we haven't really had much transfer news this year at all.
Vila Filiz had done a piece about the number of transfers in the women's peloton this year, and beginning of November last year, there had been 72 transfers. By the same time this year, there were 45. So it's 38% fewer transfers. And not only that, but some squads are actually reducing in size. So FDJ Suez is shrinking its squad to 14 riders. EF Education Oatley's going down to 16. Visma Leasebike are also cutting. So we're in a situation whereby there are probably going to be fewer women's World Tour riders in 2026 than they were in 2025. So I found that really striking, and at a time when I guess we all feel like women's cycling is growing, that kind of makes you think, you know, that the bubble won't necessarily continue to expand. There might come a point where we reach that stagnation. Maybe we are kind of reaching there, getting close to that already. Or at least, you know, there are lots of signs that the growth means that the structure in women's cycling is creaking a bit, because it's a little bit uneven. We've got some very well-paid teams and stars at the top, but underneath, UCI Continental teams and others are perhaps not getting the growth or kind of getting the benefits that we might expect, given the growth at the top end.
But I guess we do need to consider that, because there were so many transfers last year, and we have heralded also the size of these contracts that the riders are signing. I mean, it used to be very uncommon for riders to sign anything more than a 1 year or 2 year contract, and now we're seeing much longer. I mean, Marianne Vos's is like until I retire contract, isn't it? An infinity contract. So we're seeing the, so, you know, we can't expect when there are so many transfers last year that there are going to continue to be so many transfers, because there are so many riders that are probably on a 2-year contract. So they're kind of expecting to stay with their team this year. I did pick out a few, the few that there have been. UAE are kind of bolstering with taking in Pauline Royakkers from Fenix de Koenig and Mavi Garcia, two kind of stars actually of the Tour de France fam this year, weren't they? They're both going to UAE. And then Charlotte Kuhl is leaving Picnic PostNL. Well, she left to go to Fenix de Koenig. That's a really kind of juicy one, isn't it, actually? Because how well has she done at Picnic PostNL? I'm kind of questioning myself midway through my sentence. But she, we kind of always touted her as the great rival to Lorena Vivas, but it just hasn't been that, has it, Rebecca, for her? And I think, you know, for sprinters, it is such a confidence game that if there's anything awry, if you're not fully comfortable in your team and feel like you've got the full backing and you can do exactly how you want, then sprinters don't tend to do well in that kind of environment, do they? We do see sprinters kind of, they do have these sudden, I remember with Lorena Vivas, actually, she did it, didn't she? She was at, well, I guess the precursor to Picnic PostNL, which was maybe Sunweb at the time. And she had this big kind of fallout and suddenly left and went off to SD Works. And we were like, well, is that going to really work out for her? And then we were like, oh, right, yeah, it has, yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. It is. I mean, it's a confidence game, isn't it? For you know, GC leaders, for sprinters, but I think especially for sprinters, because your mind has to be so, so fully committed to take that sprint victory at that pointy end of the race. It takes absolutely everything, doesn't it, in your mindset to do it, and you have to be comfortable in the team. But I think your big hesitation there is because last year, for Charlotte Kuhl, what they achieved in the first two stages of the tour was huge. And because it hadn't all gone the way of Charlotte Kuhl, I think it turned heads even more, didn't it? And there was so much chatter around that. But this year, she evidently just hasn't been in the best place. And then she's announced that immediate early team move. So I completely agree with you that it obviously something wasn't sitting right with her in the team, and she's made that big decision to go. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens next, because yeah, I feel like it was at points everything was going right for her and she put in some brilliant huge victories and evidently had the brilliant lead out and the team support. But this year, for whatever reason, she clearly hasn't been too happy at the team and has moved. I was going to throw in a wild card, actually, that were on my list of winners and then sort of ties in with the team transfer news. And that's Volker Wessels, who I think this season have punched well above their weight all year and have just offered so much entertainment in attacks and brilliant moves. Aline Jansen has just been attack, attack, attack. Margot van Paktebeke has confirmed she's going to lead all Trek. So yeah, I just think Volker Wessels for me have offered a lot of entertainment. So I was just going to throw that in on my wild card mention of my winners of the season.
We haven't mentioned at all about the Tour of Chongmen Island, which is of course the season closer, wasn't it? But that was won by Anne Knienenberg of Volker Wessels, which is a great, you know, world tour win. And it's also a great kind of demonstration of people to look out for in the future. And as you said, you know, we kept on seeing Eileen Jansen up there, didn't we, in the biggest races and, you know, outperforming many of the world tour peers. So we've got lots to expect from them.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
There are so many winners and losers, and we will have missed some quite major ones, no doubt, in our little recap. But it's interesting when we have been talking about the World Tour teams shrinking in light of this news that was revealed at Ruler Live. And that was about the, I want to say, formation of Team Amani, but actually the team has existed for a few years now, but certainly the stepping up of the team. They were kind of very much gravel focused, but now Team Amani will become the first ever African-based continental team. So I spoke to a few of the key players in that. So let's hear what they had to say about their arrival on the road racing scene next year.
It really has been an ambition, a goal of mine, to play a role in paying it forward to Africa and in helping African athletes find their way to the highest level.
When Ashley Moorman-Passio started cycling, she was the only African rider in the professional women's peloton. Since her career began, though, there have been a number of breakthroughs for Africa in the cycling world. First African to wear the polka dot jersey, Daniel Tekle-Hymenot. First African to win a jersey at the Tour, Biniam Girmay. And this year, Kim LeCourt became the first African woman to wear the yellow jersey. And then, of course, there was the World Championships, held for the first time in the continent in Rwanda. And it was all kicked off on the time trial ramp by Rwandan rider Xaverine Nereri.
When they put the flag on, I said, that's my dream, now it's come true. I was so excited and I was happy to present my country on home and to show everyone what Africa can do and what even the women can do like a man.
Next year heralds yet another landmark moment, both for Africa and for Xaverine herself, as she will become a key rider for the first ever African-based women's continental team. Team Amani has existed as a gravel racing team for many years, even organising its own races like the Migration Gravel Race in Kenya, but is now taking the step up to the pro road ranks. And Moorman-Passio will work as a mentor to the team, alongside continuing to race for AG Insurance.
You know, in Africa, women are, it's still, to this day, it's not common for women to go and chase their dreams and to chase their own success. Usually they're expected to stay at home and to take on a more, nurturing role of keeping the home, looking after the children. I mean, throughout my career, even from the early days, like I very quickly could acknowledge and realize how cycling helped me as a woman in terms of empowering me to grow first in strength and then in confidence, you know, and then that confidence carried over not only into confidence on the bike, but confidence in life in general, and has helped me become the, not only the rider I am today, but the leader that I am today. I didn't have anyone as a female role model. Of course, there were some male cyclists in, you know, Robbie Hunter, because I was really the first African female rider to create a full-time career for myself in the peloton. You know, I also have to acknowledge that I'm a white African rider. You know, Kim is also a white African rider. Often we're not necessarily as relatable to the rest of Africa. You know, I often live with this imposter syndrome sometimes as well. You know, I want to inspire the African riders, but am I really so relatable to them? We do need a Black African female role model to really allow it to really hit home.
The challenges for African female cyclists can begin before they've even raced a pedal stroke, having to battle against family and community perceptions. Such was the case for Xaverine, whose own brother twice won the Tour de Rwanda.
I come from Rwanda and my family, we are 8 children. I was cycling when I was 13 years old. I was using the bike for going to Sukuru, going and come back. On 2015, my brother won the first 2-0, and I asked him, I want to join the circuit. He didn't say no. He told me, okay, come and try. And he gave me the mountain bike. I started with the mountain bike. Then I started to riding, but for fun, not like ride for professional. I started to win the some races, to finish it on top 5. Sometime I won on the podium, and I tell myself, now I can do cycling as my career. My parent, they didn't accept it. But my grandfather, he told me, go and try, I will support you. Then in 2021, I joined the team Amani.
Unfortunately, Zavarin's grandfather passed away exactly 1 year prior to her victory at the migration race. But she has changed the hearts and minds of her parents, who came to Kigali for the first time in 12 years to see her race in the World Championships.
They told me, now you love the bike, and you love what you are doing. You are doing well. Just they told me, keep going. All of you, they told me, we are behind of you.
Of course, there has previously been an African team at the highest levels of the sport. That was MTN Quebeca. The team began in the early 2010s, ostensibly with the vision to bring African riders to the biggest races, but it soon became another vehicle for European races instead. I asked Zylon Van Eyck, partnerships director at Team Amani, how they could avoid the same pitfalls.
I was lucky enough to be part of MTN Quebeca in the very beginning. I can't speak to what the team had become later on with less and less African riders because I wasn't there at that time. But what they did do was be a case study and show that African riders can have a place in professional cycling. And we've seen a sprinkling of that over the years. But we are being bold in our vision. We are stating right up front, Team Amani will always be a 100% African team. We are under no illusion that what we're trying to achieve is very ambitious. We've discovered that our women are very close to world class in the kind of watts per kg numbers that they're pushing. Obviously, they're going to need a lot more experience riding inside a peloton. The talent is there. The challenge, obviously, is doors opening in terms of right up front race invites, showing that we are capable, showing that we belong here. And then with all things in professional cycling, it is funding to make a seat at the table for yourself is going to take an enormous amount of support from people who believe in this project.
One thing they are looking to do differently, though, is not just to be a pathway, but to foster a sense of belonging for the riders. The team already have a base in the distance running mecca of Itun in Kenya and have plans to create a high-performance centre there in the future. Riders can stay and train there, as well as access English language lessons in an effort to help them navigate the potential culture shock that comes with life in the peloton.
The barrier of then being understood, you know, coming from such a different culture, you know, very different styles of eating, you know, their lifestyles can be quite basic, you know, in Africa. It's living in quite a humble home. Maybe it's, you know, quite a few people living in quite a small space, and they've got to find themselves on an aeroplane into a first world country. That's also hugely intimidating and scary for them, not to mention all the obstacles that you have to overcome and all the challenges you have to overcome by just finding your way in the peloton, finding your place, being able to position yourself because nobody knows you and you're not respected in the peloton. I had to really make a lot of sacrifices. It's meant, you know, uprooting myself from my home country, my continent, making a home or a life for myself in Europe. And I was lucky enough to be successful in doing so. I had the support of my husband, Carl, and, you know, we really did it as a team. So, you know, we were quite young when we first came over, so it was one big adventure. And thankfully, this big adventure turned into a successful career.
The hope for Team Amani is that it's a sustainable project, fostering a future interest in racing, even in countries where a strong cycling culture already exists.
on a Saturday in Iten, Kenya, where the team is based. We've got what we call the chapati race. So chapati is ingredients of like the local bread that you can win, a local bread that you can make. And moms send their kids to take part in the chapati race, you know, and kids race in their various age categories. And it's just a whole lot of fun. But that's a way of building cycling into the community and showing it as a way of a viable sport. So you go to Eritrea, if you go to Ethiopia, you will see there's a culture of cycling. There's racing week in, week out. And it's no surprise that we are seeing some of the best African talent the last 10, 12, 13 years come from those countries, because there's a culture that already exists there. And I think the cycling world will be pleasantly surprised. And I'm particularly excited because I've loved this sport since I was 10 years old. I do feel like the sport as a whole isn't maybe growing at the pace that it can grow. And I think one of the things it needs to address is it needs new heroes. It needs new stories to tell. It needs new continents. When Binyam Girmay, you know, won the green jersey or the first stage at the Tour de France, all of a sudden people were falling over themselves to get his story, to get his backstory, because it's something so new in sport. But as I said earlier, that's a case study. And I believe there are 100, 200 more Binyam Girmay men and women waiting to be discovered. If we do our jobs right, we are going to change the face of the sport in 20 years' time. You know, I would love for you to turn the Tour de France on, men's and women's Tour de France in 20 years' time, and you know, 30% of the peloton are Black African riders with incredible stories and just so inspirational with the backgrounds that they come from. This is a sport we all love. It's a sport we want to see grow. It's a sport we want to see become, you know, more popular than other sports becoming more popular in this fast changing world. And I think Team Imani has a role to play in that.
That might seem like a big ambition, but stating a goal of making it to the Tour de France fan by 2028 is also a big ambition, which is why the team have brought on the likes of Scarbu Girmay as head coach.
Scarbu is really the one to keep us on track and keep the project authentic and understand that we need to start from the ground up. 3 years, 2028, that is not a long time. And we agree. So we have to be very strategic in how we see we going to achieve that. But also people might not be au fait with Africa. Ethiopia, for instance, there is, I don't want to give away our secrets, but there is a world of talent. And the Tigray area especially, there are established local teams who race against each other month after month. So a lot of the groundwork has been done already. Up to now, the team has been predominantly East African. So countries like Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, the DRC, as of this year, Ethiopia will be playing. The women's team will be registered in Ethiopia because that's where we'll have the most amount of athletes coming from. And then as of recently, we're branching out to South Africa and Mauritius as well.
Girmay's own wife, Ethiopian Hadnet Asmalash, was also once an aspiring cyclist.
Early days of Sevelo Bigla, she was calling me, Ashley, I love what you're doing. I want to be a pro too. Mm. And I'd race against her at the African Championships and I could see she had talent. But I didn't manage to help her find her way to Europe because at that time, you know, convincing a European team to sign an Ethiopian rider with all the complications of visas, even the fact that potentially they're trying to escape their country because of the unrest there. And what if they go missing, you know, in Europe and we're responsible for them? I didn't manage to help someone like her.
And even all the remarkable victories of Kim LeCourt almost didn't happen.
She also tried to become or to establish a pro career, I think, back quite a few years ago. And she wasn't successful. She didn't have a family around her to support her. She was on a lower level team and she failed. 2023, I went back to race her at the Cape Town Cycle Tour, which is quite a big, you know, cyclist sportif race in South Africa. And Kim was racing. And she won. So that's what got her thinking again. And her husband started reaching out to teams. And most teams she sent emails to ignored her or didn't come back. And then finally, Natasha Knaven, you know, went back to her. And Natasha saw the opportunity. She made it happen. And Kim came over. And you just see how, you know, having come into a really established World Tour team with great support, great infrastructure, good race equipment, how she just thrived, you know, and imagine if she'd had access to that 10 years prior. There's no doubt that African riders have a lot of resilience. There is so many challenges that they have to face on a day-to-day basis, you know, whether that's, you know, the Ethiopian riders who are living in a country which is still currently facing, you know, war and unrest, to just the challenges that a lot of African communities face on a day-to-day basis, you know, just hand-to-mouth style of life. So there's no doubt that they have a lot of resilience. There's a lot of talent. And now we just really want to invest in helping this talent reach its full potential.
So what about next year? The team are looking to get invitations to Point 1 and Point 2 races around Europe, and Zavarin Nereri thinks they have all the tools they need to make a success of it.
If you wanted to win, you need to have a big team, like you have a climber, you have a sprinter, you have a rider who can go to car to bring you the food or water. And in the team Amani, we have both. I believe next year, the race we start to do, I think we bring good results, because now we have a stronger team. We make the team happy.
Well, that is such an exciting prospect, isn't it, to have Team Amani racing. You know, their kind of race schedule isn't entirely confirmed yet, but we're certainly expecting to see them at some of the Spanish races. It's kind of a remarkable achievement, and also a really ambitious one, isn't it? Because we have mentioned that certainly on the European side, it feels like things are shrinking and getting smaller, and we're losing races, we lose kind of development teams. So it's amazing to have a team come out and say, this is what we stand for, and we're going to be an African-based team. And to be so ambitious, to have a focus to be at the Grand Tours and the Tour de France FAM within 3 years is really remarkable. And it kind of is the perfect time for it, isn't it? Because we have had Kim Lacourt in yellow this year, you know, also being a classics winner this year. She's, of course, a Mauritian rider with also some, you know, based in South Africa for many years also. It's almost like the time is right. And of course, having the World Championships in Rwanda, which was remarkable. The crowds were remarkable. The kind of attention that it got was great. And you were commentating on it, Rebecca, weren't you? So you kind of got a sense of the buzz around cycling in Africa.
Definitely. And like you say, it's just further carrying on that momentum. And Ashley Momampasio, I have to say, she's just brilliant in the way she's continued to perform as she has at the top end of the peloton, whilst doing so much hard work behind the scenes to develop African cyclists and African cycling as a whole. I think she's utterly brilliant. I can't sing her praises enough. For me, I think what was really special about that really pivotal moment that we saw the Worlds come to Africa for the first time in Rwanda, as you say, was the fact that Zavarin Nereri was the first off the start ramp and then remained in that hot seat for a long time on the TT day. So it was the opening event of the world. She was there in the spotlight for Rwanda. And I think that evidently meant a lot to her. And as I say, the momentum that that could bring as well.
Yeah, it's really kind of exciting. And to say outright, I mean, we do get that sometimes, don't we? Teams do often say, oh, we want to be at the Tour de France FAM in X number of years. It's exciting to see if it happens or not, but it's often a kind of shared ambition of a lot of the smaller teams. But yeah, since we last spoke, actually, we have had the Tour de France FAM route announced for next year, haven't we? We knew it was going to have a Swiss start. We knew that actually when we were at the Tour, didn't we? Because I think we did a little social clip, Denny, on one lake where Switzerland was the other side of the lake and we were on the French side, and we said, oh, we're going to be sampling the cheese over there next year. But Denny, do you want to give us a little overview of what we have in store next year for the Tour de France FAM?
Well, 9 stages once again, slightly longer edition. In fact, it'll be the longest edition at 1,175 kilometres. Once again, a very backloaded parcours. I guess the highlight, the big talking point, is that on stage 7, the race will be going up Mont Ventoux and finishing up there. But we also have kind of a number of other stages which look significant. A time trial, the 21 kilometer time trial on kind of rolling terrain, will be on stage 4. And then we have a short, sharp, punchy stage around Nice to finish the tour, which looks exciting. But of course, we start, as you said, in Switzerland, work our way through many, many great cheeses. From Switzerland in Gruyere country, through to the Jura, where Comte is from, of course.
That's your number one, isn't it, Denny? Comte.
Beaufort Chalet Delpage now has become a new favourite of mine since this year's tour.
Well, that was an honour to eat that with you then.
FOMO.
Yeah, we'll send you some in the post, Becca. Don't worry.
That'll be lovely.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
For people who aren't big fans of cheese, and sadly there are one or two, we also kind of go to Dijon. We'll be going through wine country, of course, because we go through Beaujolais and wine country. So, yeah, I think the racing looks really interesting. I think the big question mark will be, will the GC contenders all wait for that Mont Ventoux summit finish on stage 7? Will there be that kind of waiting game that we saw this year?
I am surprised you haven't mentioned the zone of ambiguity, because you were really trying to make that happen this year. And there is a bit of a zone of ambiguity on this year's race, where there's a few kind of the hilly stages in the middle, which kind of probably didn't quite light up this year, did they? But, you know, they could be really exciting. They could be also a bit of a wet firework. It's almost like I almost said wet fart there, but I did back out.
Oh, you got it in anyway. That's not your summary and overall impression of the route this year,
is
it?
No.
Wet fart. Just to clarify, that's not your opinion.
No, just to clarify. It's just that it has the zone of ambiguity potential, doesn't it? In the middle there, middle stages. Sorry, Denny, carry on.
The zone of ambiguity just fell flat on its face, didn't it, in 2025? So I thought I won't bring it up again. But glad you have. Glad you revived it, Rose.
Oh, yeah.
We can bring it back for 2026, and let's hope there is a proper zone of ambiguity this time.
What's your thoughts, Becca, of Mont Ventoux? Because we have had now, I kind of felt like Col de la Madeleine was a bit different, because we don't really see that as a kind of major summit finish in the men's tour. Historically, it's not really the riders often in both men's and women's racing go up and over it, but not necessarily finishing at the top of it. But we have, of course, had these kind of iconic climbs in the past. Alpe d'Huez 2 years ago, Mont Ventoux definitely falls into that category of kind of the legend of it is so big. And also, you know, the riders won't have had loads of experience on Mont Ventoux necessarily, but I think they will certainly have had a bit of experience, because there are some smaller races that do go up there. But yeah, what's your kind of anticipation for a stage like that?
Oh, it's just going to be amazing, isn't it? I think this is what we've wanted for so many years and so many seasons from a race as big as the Tour de France Femmes, Avec Swift, is to have these high mountains. And the fact that we've had the reveal now, the confirmation it will be Mont Ventoux this year, everyone's talking about it, no doubt. And I can't wait. For me, it's just everything that brings, you know, history in the making, the paint on the road, the crowds. I just love a summit finish like that, of that magnitude. I'm so excited for it. Obviously, big disappointment that not every stage is going to be suited to my favourite Lorena Vibes this year. But no, jokes aside, I think it is an exciting route. I think it is going to lend itself to attritional racing. I think we're going to potentially see that zone of ambiguity, Denny. I think we're going to see some surprises again, maybe opportunities taken in some of those stages. But yeah, no doubt the fact that we've seen the addition of Ventoux is going to be mightily exciting for this edition. And also the fact that I do think there's been big differences in the route reveal every edition so far, and that's probably the same to be said for this one.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of all follow a similar sort of, they all have this crescendo, don't they? They all kind of start a bit more, a bit a few bumpy bits and quite flat, and then it kind of just ramps up and up and up and up. It's sort of similar to last year, isn't it, in that it's kind of going for that double-pronged finish where there shouldn't be just one opportunity. It's not necessarily laying out that if you win on Vontu, then you win the whole thing. They're kind of leaving the door open a bit towards the end that there might be an upset even on the final day. Any race route is trying to aspire to be as thrilling and dramatic and exciting as that Alpe d'Huez finish was last year, and it is kind of impossible to predict that. But that's all down to the riders, isn't it? That's where the riders come in, and it's about how they race it.
I think what's different about this year's route, though, is that the time trial is quite significant at 21 kilometres, whereas this year we saw Pauline Ferrand-Prevot just absolutely nail her preparation. She knew exactly that it would all be about the Col de Madeleine, and she smashed it, let's face it, decimated the opposition. I think it's less likely it will come down just to the one stage, or at least that's the hope of the organisers in introducing the time trial, because we may have a situation where we have a rider who's perhaps not a specialist climber, who, or maybe a Marlon Reusser, somebody like that, who's perhaps not as, you know, classically good on those really high climbs as somebody like Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, kind of in the lead, and then the game will be, you know, can she hold on to it? So that interest introduces another dynamic. But as you say, it's really, I think we have to hope that the GC riders, there's more GC action in the lead up to those kind of big stages this year, next year rather, which we didn't see this year.
That's right. I think the Col de Madeleine was almost kind of stifled everyone's sort of GC charge, didn't it, a little bit? Kind of people were keeping their powder dry until that big climb. But there's certainly lots of opportunities to get ahead, including on the first day, in fact.
Well, the other thing that's, I think, significant this year and next year is that, of course, the Giro will be starting a lot earlier in the season. So it does leave open the possibility that riders can target both races properly. The window is so small this year that you did see riders almost having to choose which race they were going to target, whereas I think we may see even more riders going for GC in the Tour de France fam this year as a result of that gap. So that will be interesting as well to see what the riders' programmes are when they kind of reveal them in the new year.
Well, it is all extremely exciting, extremely thrilling. None of it is as exciting as the prospect of a Christmas quiz next month, of course. And I say next month, but obviously it's just a matter of weeks, really, the Christmas quiz. I know that I need to get off and start learning for that. You guys need to be doing all of your prep, of course, listening to strange sounds made by riders through the year.
I've done nothing else.
Going in it. That's all I'm doing. Can you name that sexy sob or whatever was in last
it was a sexy
last year's
sob.
Edition? So I'm looking forward to seeing you both. We hope for a bit of a windswept edition of the Christmas quiz. I'll say no more than that, because also if it all falls through, then we'll have to just stand outside in my garden or something. But it should be more thrilling than standing in my garden. Let me just put that out there for the listeners. But thank you very much for joining me both. Rebecca, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, both of you.
And Denny, thank you very much. I meant to mention, Denny, your background today, because you normally are Swiss Chalet, aren't you? And today you're sort of beatnik sort of New York cafe, and you're wearing a turtleneck. It's all very...
It works.
It works, doesn't it? But anyway, thank you, Denny. And if you can say your goodbye in a beatnik poetry style, that'd be much appreciated.
Oh, geez. My Jack Kerouac knowledge, beat poetry knowledge, is pretty low off the top of my head. I couldn't possibly venture into that territory, unfortunately, Rose. I'm going to have to disappoint you. You didn't ask me about cheese. Ask me about cheese, then I'm fine. But this is uncomfortable territory for me, unfortunately.
Well, just name one cheese then, Denny, and we can just all go.
Colson Bassett.
Done. Okay, well, thank you very much to both of you, and thank you very much, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.